Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, February 12th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be gathering around the virtual water cooler to talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer Nina Starner.
Oh, hi.
Nina, have you recovered from the Super Bowl yet? I know you're based out of the Philadelphia area, so what was that experience like for you?
I'm based out of Philadelphia proper, actually. I'm right in the heart of the city. I should be really honest. I'm not a huge football person. Like, I didn't know what a pick six was a week ago, and now I can't stop watching the video of Cooper DeJean doing one, for lack of a better term. But Philly is, like, it's one of the best cities in the world, as my totally unbiased opinion as someone who grew up here. And when we win a Super Bowl, which we've only ever done twice, it is so electric and fun here. So the parade is on Friday. I will be at that in some capacity because it's going to be a madhouse. So I have no idea what my strategy is. But yeah, I'm still kind of recovering from just watching the Eagles absolutely blow the Chiefs out.
Awesome. Okay. So let's transition into what we've been reading. I talked about what I'd been reading, I think, last week on the podcast, but looks like you've been reading a bunch of stuff. Tell me about that.
I read a lot, Ben. I am a very fast reader, and a lot of the books that I've read recently, I actually am not putting on this list because they're like shitty thrillers from Kindle Unlimited that I just kind of cruise through when I'm bored.
No judgment. And reading is reading.
Yeah, no, I love to read. I always have. So I actually have a subscription to Book of the Month. So shout out to them. It's a really good subscription if you, like me, are a really big reader. And so I got two books from that. One that I already finished, which is called The Favorites by Lane Fargo. I really like Lane Fargo's work. She has a previous book that I read a while ago called They Never Learn. That's really, really fun. If you like female rage, which I do. And The Favorites is like a really long history of these two figure skaters who have kind of a romantic relationship and kind of just this weird bond with each other. And it's a little like Daisy Jones and the Six adjacent, but it's very, very good. Fantastic Land was a super messed up, weird book that I loved, that is like an oral history of when a theme park gets destroyed by a hurricane and the people in the park basically create a sort of dystopian Hunger Games and start killing each other.
Which
was just really wild and fun. Like, I think I stayed up till 3 a.m. with that one because I needed to see how it ended. And then I have Penitence by Kristen Koval on this list, which is a debut novel that I've only just started, but it's a story about a family who they experience a really huge unexpected tragedy regarding their children and just kind of how they pick up the pieces. And it's going to shift through a bunch of different timelines. So I'm excited about that one. But Yeah, out of what I've read recently, The Favourites and Fantasticland are both excellent.
Man, yeah, that's a great series of recommendations. I feel like you should tell Jacob about Fantasticland. That seems right up his alley.
Oh, I definitely will. I'll go in the appropriate Slack channels and spread the good word.
Okay, so let's get into what we've been watching. I went to the theater to see a movie called One of Them Days. Have you seen this?
I have not. Tell me about it.
Yes. So Kiki Palmer and SZA star as two best friends and roommates going through a one wild day type of plot in Los Angeles.
Amazing.
Where they're just trying to.
Just named two of my favorite people. So that's, I'm already invested.
Yeah. Ryan and I have talked a little bit about this on the podcast before, just in terms of box office. Like, this movie's been doing surprisingly well for a film that has a pretty small budget and not a huge, robust marketing campaign. Like, I didn't even really know that this movie existed until I started seeing, oh, yeah, it's doing surprisingly well at the box office or whatever. But I'd heard good things about it right after that, like people saying, hey, this is great, you should go check it out. So I finally got around to seeing it. And yeah, it's basically like this. These roommates are trying to do simple things like get their landlord the rent money and like make it to mm-hmm. a job interview on time. And they keep getting thwarted in comical ways. And I laughed a lot. It made me mad all over again that Hollywood has basically stopped investing in theatrical comedies. But
yeah,
shout out to Cyrita Singleton, who is the screenwriter of this movie, because even though this is like a throwback to very familiar types of comedies that we used to see all the time in the 90s and 2000s, this is an original idea. So shout out for that. And then
would you call it, just quickly, would you call it like a buddy comedy? Because I feel like over the past couple of years, like Joyride was a really fun one. Obviously, Girls Trip was huge. Mm-hmm. And then like Quiz Lady in 2023 was just like a nice little, you know, two-hander that sounds similar of like, you know, Awkwafina and Sandra Oh trying to accomplish a goal.
Yes.
So would you put it in that kind of same category? Because I really enjoyed all those movies.
Yeah, 100% in that lineage, but maybe with like a little bit of a nod to maybe a more blatant nod to something like Friday from back in the
nice.
Day, you know, like
okay,
that kind of there's like, it's really a well-executed movie. There's a cheesiness to it that feels almost like, I mentioned the 90s and 2000s, but there's almost like an 80s, like Save the Rec Center type of movie vibe to it, you know,
yeah.
where you're like,
right.
Is this simple resolution that they come to really the way that this situation would work? Probably not, but it doesn't matter because I'm having such a good time with it, you know? So,
right.
Yeah, Kiki Palmer is just so much fun to watch. She has such a great energy to her as a performer. I love watching her.
She is so charismatic. Like,
yeah.
Her in Nope is
yeah.
one of the all-time great performances of the last handful of years. She's just, I can never look away from Kiki Palmer. When she's even being interviewed for something, she's just oozing with charisma. I love her so much.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I had some issues with Nope at the time, but watching this made me want to go back to that movie because I remember her being just really enjoyable in that
yeah,
film.
Yeah, so she's so good.
Time for yeah. a rewatch there. And then SZA, who, as far as I know, has not acted before, was just really entertaining as the larger-than-life best friend character. So, yeah, the movie's called One of Them Days. It's in theaters now. I recommend people check that out. I also, for the first time, watched Eraserhead, which is David Lynch's debut movie. Have you seen this one?
I have, and I think I brought this up in the Slack channel when we were talking about, obviously, David Lynch passing away last month, but there used to be a huge Eraserhead mural in Philadelphia because he was inspired, I'm using that in air quotes because he really didn't like Philadelphia. He was inspired by how gross Philly was when he lived here to make Eraserhead. And the neighborhood where that mural once was is affectionately referred to as Eraserhood. So,
yeah, so I had never seen this. I think it's fair to call this one of the biggest cult classics of all time. And
for sure,
in the wake of Lynch's death, I thought maybe it was finally time for me to sit down and watch this thing. Just to cut to the chase, this is a classic case of, I admire this movie more than I actually like it.
Yeah.
If this makes me some sort of uncultured slob, so be it. But I can only give you my honest responses to things. And it's not like I was disappointed by the movie. I knew that Lynch crafted singular worlds, and I was very much stepping into his playground, and I prepared to give myself over to what he was doing mm-hmm. with it, which is just a big allegory for becoming a parent and living in a world that you don't understand, basically. But the messages and the metaphors and the bizarre imagery and all that is like really fun to engage with and think about and try to parse or reflect on why it feels like he's burrowing under your skin with certain shots or moments. But the fact of the movie for me is that it was just so slow that it felt like it was dragging so much that I lost whatever connection I might have had with it. Like, people were probably screaming at their podcast players saying that David Lynch purposefully tells stories in unconventional ways specifically to unsettle you and to make you think about things in ways that are different from how traditional movies might do things.
Sure. But if mileage is going to vary. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get
and it was just like so glacially paced that it didn't really click with me. But man, the character designs, the cinematography, the sets, and especially the sound design are just out of this world. And like, despite there being a rash of imitators, there really just was nobody like David Lynch. So
no, I'm so glad we got a look inside of that man's brain while he was gracing us with his presence. I mean, nobody was ever doing it like him. And this movie is, I mean, I agree with you in sort of a different sense in that, like, it's been a while since I've seen it, but it's kind of seared into my brain because it's so unsettling. And it's not a movie that I would necessarily say I enjoy watching. I respect the hell out of it, but I'm also like, ugh, every time that I'm kind of exposed to it. So, you know, and I mean, I've wrote about this on Slash Film, like, Mulholland Drive is a brilliant movie, and that jump scare freaked me out so badly that, like, whenever I want to sit down and watch it, I'm like, oh no, I don't want to watch that part. I feel like this is not that uncommon with Lynch movies, but yeah, Eraserhead is trippy and awesome in many ways. It is probably paced slowly, as you know, he loved to challenge an audience, and sometimes you're going to really get into that. And sometimes you're just going to maybe not want that challenge. And I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The most interesting thing for me, I think, was seeing how many shots and sets and ideas were right there from the beginning that would be repeated throughout his filmography. Like, the whole film is in black and white, but there's a set that looks very similar to the Red Room from Twin Peaks. And there's a shot where a character looks down at another character who's crouched at the foot of their bed that is very similar to a very famous shot of the villainous Bob character from Twin Peaks as well. And it's just always fun to clock recurring imagery and things like that across a director's body of work.
I love that. And I'm going to bring up a really left field comparison, but I think it could work. So let's try it. I am a huge Tim Robinson fan. And if you go back and watch his episode of Netflix's The Characters, which is like an episodic sketch series where they have a different comic do every episode, if you watch his episode of that, it is a blueprint for I Think You Should Leave, which is his Emmy award-winning sketch show that's also on Netflix. And I watched I Think You Should Leave first and then went back and was like, oh, I can see this sketch came from this and this sketch came from this. And I do think Eraserhead has the same situation where you can really see the genesis of a lot of motifs that come back later, which is really cool. And, you know, I would also say I Think You Should Leave has some Lynchian elements to it. I mean, it's deeply unsettling and weird. Like, if anyone who's watched that show is like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But I mean, I love when you can spot those little, not, I can't even call them Easter eggs, but just those ideas that then blossom into something completely different down the line.
Yeah, definitely. So Eraserhead is streaming on the Criterion Channel and Max right now, if you want to seek that out. Speaking of movies that I didn't fully connect with, Alfred Hitchcock directed a much more straightforward film called Lifeboat that came out in 1944. And John Steinbeck wrote the story for it. And it's basically about several survivors who climb aboard a decent-sized lifeboat after a German U-boat and an American ship end up sinking each other. And it's this sort of one location pot boiler that serves as a microcosm of society at the time and primarily deals with these American characters as they decide what to do with the one German survivor who has made it onto this little boat. So I think there's some really good performances here. There's like character actors like Tallulah Bankhead and Walter Slezak and these people that most of our listeners probably don't know who they are. But it's kind of, the movie reminded me a lot of 12 Angry Men on the Open Sea. You know, it's a morality tale.
Right.
And the reason I say that I didn't fully connect with it was because I came away from the movie slightly unsure of what message it was trying to get across. It's tough to talk about without spoiling too much, but I'll just say that there are a couple of reveals and surprises, and I ultimately wasn't sure if the film was trying to say that engaging in a bloodthirsty America First approach to solving this problem is the correct course of action, or if trying to hold the moral high ground over their enemy would have been preferable. And I was reading a little bit about the reaction to the movie during its release, which was like at the height of World War II. And apparently some of the critics around the country were having similar thoughts and questions back then as well. So Hitchcock ultimately ended up saying that the movie's moral was that the Allies needed to stop fighting amongst themselves and work together to win the war. But I don't know. I just found the actual text of the film to be a little murkier than that. So I would still recommend watching this. Hitchcock does a good job of making the most out of a very limited setting when it comes to moving the camera and keeping the visuals exciting and all that jazz. But yeah, that's Lifeboat. You can rent it for, I think, $4 at all the usual places.
You know, every time I think I have a handle on Hitchcock and like his filmography, I learn about a different film I've never heard of that he directed. Like, I thought, you know, I'm relatively familiar with his body of work. I've never heard of Lifeboat. I will seek it out at some point, but I'm curious to see if it hits for me.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't have the number in front of me of how many movies he made overall, because I know he made a bunch of movies in the UK before he came to Hollywood. But like, man, yeah, he's got a ton. And he's one of the most famous directors in the world for a reason, because there's just so many bangers in his filmography.
Oh, yeah. And even I got to see Vertigo in 35mm last year at a local theater in Philly on like a huge screen. And it was like a life-changing experience to just sit down and be immersed in that movie. I mean, he's one of the greatest to ever do it. But I'm like, what's Lifeboat? What is this?
The last movie that I wanted to mention is called 5 Centimeters Per Second, which I had only seen a couple movies from Makoto Shinkai, the filmmaker behind Your Name and Suzume. But I liked those two enough that I wanted to explore some of his other work. Are you familiar with him at all?
I'm not.
Okay, so Your Name is fantastic. That was the first one that I saw. It came out in 2016. He's an anime director, and my God, just like it ripped my heart out of my chest. I was openly weeping watching the movie. It's just so beautiful. The story, everything. It's fantastic. Suzume is a little weirder. It's about a guy who turns into a chair and like becomes friends with this girl, and they unlock these gates and portals around the world. It's very, very strange. That's but also really beautiful.
Wild. Okay.
Yeah. So the Criterion Channel has several of his feature films and short films available right now. So I went back to his 2007 movie 5 Centimeters Per Second, which is told across a 15-year period from the early 90s through around 2007, 2008. And it's broken up into three segments. So the main character is this boy named Takaki. And each segment is about a relationship that he has with a girl in his life. And the first one happens when he's either in elementary school or junior high. He's pretty young. And he connects with this girl named Akari. And a wrench is thrown into their potential relationship when he finds out that his family is going to be moving away. Mm-hmm. And then the second segment jumps ahead to him in high school and switches perspective to a girl, a different girl who has quietly loved Takaki for years but has never had the courage to tell him. And then the third jumps ahead even further and switches perspective back to Takaki, and we learn that he is still harboring feelings for the first girl from all those years ago. And overall, I think the movie is not quite as powerful as Your Name, but it's still a really beautiful movie, both in like the yearning and wistfulness that comes across, but also the aesthetics and the style. Like, if you just look at some screenshots of Makoto Shinkai's work, I mean, in the stuff that I've seen from him, he's just a master at creating some of the most gorgeous animated imagery that you'll ever see. So that extends all the way back to 2007 with this really poignant love story that he made here. So, and actually, like, similar to what we were just talking about, like in Eraserhead and stuff like that, I noticed some of those motifs and moments that have recurred throughout his body of work. So I was intrigued on that level as well. So yeah, 5 Centimeters Per Second streaming on the Criterion Channel right now. Definitely good stuff. I would put Your Name as like the one to watch to introduce yourself to his filmography, though, for you and anyone else.
Is that also on Criterion?
That one is not there right now. I'm not sure if that's streaming anywhere else, but I will try to look that up and provide that answer before we end this recording.
Well, I was going to say, worth noting, because you've mentioned a couple, Criterion is a really good subscription with a lot of really great movies. You should all get it if you don't have it.
It's awesome. Okay, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and get into what you've been watching.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
with new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tap. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Okay, Nina, tell me what you've been watching recently.
Well, unfortunately, I haven't had a ton of time to go physically see a movie recently. I really need to go see The Brutalist, but I'm trying to find 4 hours in a day where that is doable. And so that may have to be a digital watch, which I would not love, but might just be that way. So I was going to say I watched Nosferatu recently, and then I realized that that was like in mid-January because I don't know how time is working right now, but I do want to say that Nosferatu absolutely rips. I love it. It was so fun. Lily Rose Depp is phenomenal. But recently I rewatched Anora just because I saw it right when it first came out, and small flex, I was in Paris visiting friends when I saw it, and I was super jet lagged. So I felt like I needed to kind of get reacquainted with it. Still a movie that I really, really like. Mikey Madison is just really incredible. I feel like I appreciated her performance even more on a rewatch. And I also think that I appreciated Yuri Borisov's performance as Igor even more, just kind of watching him in the background of a lot of the scenes and watching him react and really paying more attention to him now that I know, you know, from having seen the film before, that he is such a vital part of the narrative. So I'm glad that I rewatched that, especially, you know, there's been so much conclave style turmoil in the Oscar race. And so I think some people are saying that Anora might be back on an upward trajectory to take home some awards. It performed pretty well at some guild awards like the DGAs and the PGAs. So could be a major contender for the Oscars. And then I just watched for the first time The Wild Robot. Have you seen that?
I have. What'd you think about it?
I loved it. I did cry, embarrassingly. Really, man, these animated movies, they will just grab your heartstrings and tug. Lupita Nyong'o is so good. I really want so many more movies for her. I've been on board with her basically since I first saw her in 12 Years a Slave. I'm still mad that, like, Us did not get more awards attention for her dual performance. But her vocal performance in this movie is really astounding, the way that she is able to express kind of the evolution of this robot who becomes a mother figure just in her intonations. She's really phenomenal. It's a beautiful story. It looks fantastic. I want to watch more of the animated kind of nominees for the Oscars this year. So Flow is also on my list, but Wild Robot is available on Peacock. So I was able to just go ahead and watch that. Also, Anora is, I believe, still rentable. I don't think that that is on streaming just yet. But I really, really loved Wild Robot. I love that there's a generation of animated movies that, you know, basically since the inception of Pixar, that an adult who doesn't have kids, me, can watch and not feel like a total weirdo and get something out of the story. And I just thought it was really beautifully told. The supporting voice cast was great. I'm never upset ever at Catherine O'Hara's presence. She was so good as the possum mom. But yeah, I had a great time watching it. I was like very moved by it in a way that I didn't really see coming. Did you enjoy it too?
I did. Yes. It's excellent. I think, I don't know, there seems to be like some momentum building behind Flow for potentially the best animated movie. But it's such a small film because it's from Latvia, and it's just like, it was done with a really small crew compared to something like Wild Robot, which is like a big DreamWorks movie. And so I suspect Wild Robot might end up winning. Like, if I had to, you know, gun to my head prediction, make a prediction right now, I would pick the Wild Robot just because I'm guessing the Oscar campaign funds for Wild Robot
right.
far outweighs, you know, what they have
sure.
For Flow. But that doesn't mean that both those movies aren't deserving. They're both excellent. So
yeah, I think it's cool that we have two really great options. I mean, there's obviously more nominees, but these appear to be the front runners, and it's cool yeah. that they're both like pretty good. There's no Cars 2 floating around in this race.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
So that's a relief.
So what else are you watching?
So I do watch a lot of television as well. I've been watching this season of The Traitors. I'm probably the only person at Slash Film who indulges in this. I don't suppose you've ever watched The Traitors?
I have not. I think Jacob told me all about it. I want to say he watched like the UK version and the US version and did like a compare and contrast thing. I'm pretty sure it was him. This was many months ago at this point, but yeah.
So the US version of The Traitors, I need to like find a time to sit down and binge the UK ones because I have only heard really good things about them. But the US ones have a slightly different approach. I mean, I don't know how much you know about the whole concept of it, but it's basically, you know, the game Mafia that you would play at like a kid's birthday party or whatever. It's that, but it's set in a castle and overseen by Alan Cumming, who's like really leaning into his Scottish brogue in the funniest, campiest way possible. That man is perfect. He's always wearing a different kilt and brooch and headpiece. His dog is always dressed up. He's like a phenomenal host. I love Alan Cumming. But he chooses three traitors at the beginning of the season. The faithfuls our objective is to pick them off and suss out who they are, because if any traitors remain at the very end of the show after they've compiled a big pile of money to win, if a single traitor remains, that traitor takes the entire pot away from the faithfuls and wins the whole game outright. They did a thing in the first US season where it was half like normies for lack of a better term, and then half reality stars. And the problem with that is that the reality stars just absolutely trounced the random normal people. Like it was a Survivor player, Ceri Fields, who just came in and beast moded everybody and won the game without blinking. So now it's all reality TV people. And this season has been a real weird compilation of people. You've got Gabby Windy from The Bachelorette, who is far and away my favorite person on the show because she really doesn't care. And she's just very funny and extremely endearing. You've got my personal nemesis, Tom Sandoval from Vanderpump Rules, who is just so dumb. Like, he figured out something really important, and it felt like on The Good Place when Jason figured out that it was The Bad Place and Michael got really upset. Like, it was a direct parallel to Jason figured it out when you've got Tom Sandoval figuring something out. You had Boston Rob from Survivor. Like, there's just, like, Carolyn from Survivor. It's a murderer's row of absolute weirdos in the best possible way. And it's been very fun to just watch a bunch of overdressed, strange adults wander around a castle, be bossed around by Alan Cumming, and stab each other in the back. It's a delightful, campy, and ridiculous show. And it won Alan Cumming an Emmy. So it's worth watching for him alone. But in terms of a reality TV competition, it's very silly and requires very little kind of skill, as opposed to like I do still watch Survivor, and you undeniably have to have some physical and social prowess to win that game. On The Traitors, you basically just have to be a human body standing in this exact spot and place and time. But it's really, really fun. It's a really good distraction from just the world. And it's on Peacock. It airs every Thursday at 9. The season's not quite over yet. It's so much fun.
Okay, so that's The Traitors. And then the last show that you wanted to talk about is Severance. You've been watching season 2 of Severance. So how are you thinking about it so far?
I love the season so far. I did not rewatch season 1 before diving in, and I might go back and do a rewatch at some point, but I just kind of went for it and I was not disappointed. I have been totally locked into this season, and I said to you beforehand that this is such a joy for me, an unexpected joy, is that this is my first kind of version of appointment TV viewing since probably Succession ended a couple years ago, where it's like, if I don't sit down and watch this episode as close to when it's live as possible, I can't go on Twitter. It'll get ruined for me. I won't be able to talk to people about it. Like, I need to watch it as soon as possible. So on Thursday nights around 9, I put my phone on Do Not Disturb. I fully lock in. I sit down and I watch Severance. And are you watching Severance this season, Ben?
I am. I watched the first six episodes right before the season came out because I interviewed Dan Erickson, the creator of the show, for the podcast. And so I'm getting to that point where the airing is almost catching up with where I left off. So I'm just like, I watched it so many weeks ago and I'm like struggling to remember all the main things that happened. It's helpful actually to read and edit our Slash Film coverage of it because I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. This happened in this episode or whatever. So yeah, I think I want to say it's like the final week of February. There will be the final Friday of February. There's going to be an episode that airs that I have not seen yet. And that at that point I'll be on the same page as everybody else where I'll just be watching it week to week. So I'm very much looking forward to the show catching up to where I was able to be for that sort of preseason prep kind of thing that I did. So episode four just aired for, you know, as we're recording
incredible.
This.
Incredible.
Holy cow. Like what an elevation of what I thought was possible with the show and just a complete, I'll be vague in case you haven't caught up with it yet, but just like, I think it's fair to say there was a big location change and I just didn't really expect them to do that and go to that extent. And then like, the ending of the episode reminded me of like the feeling that I got after watching the season one finale of just like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? I can't believe they did this kind of thing. So I really enjoy the show a lot. So I'm glad you're digging it as
I'll remain vague as well. But I think the thing that's impressed me the most with the four episodes that I've seen that have aired is it doesn't feel like they're rushing through any plot points, but they're covering major ground really early in season two, which just makes me really excited to see what else they have, you know, prepared for us, because it doesn't feel like that final Game of Thrones push where, you know, those two wanted to go make a Star Wars. So they were just like, here, have your ending, whatever. Like this, it feels like things are moving at an appropriate clip, but they're also doing things in episodes three, episode four that feel like they would be at the end of a normal season of television because they're so big and shocking. And they're just giving us these huge reveals. And again, like I trust Dan Erickson. I trust Ben Stiller. I can't wait to see where the show goes. It is really smart, really brilliant, funny, beautifully acted. Britt Lower is doing Emmy worthy work, as is John Turturro. And yeah, I just am really loving taking that hour every week to just, you know, plug into Severance, so to speak.
Yeah, I love that. The Do Not Disturb thing is a level of commitment that I've rarely heard of, you know, in this day and age. So I admire
that. It's
because
I'm so bad with my phone, so I have to do something.
That's great. I love that. Okay, so Severance obviously is on Apple TV Plus. If you haven't caught up with the show, what are you doing? It's amazing. It's absolutely like,
we're
talking
Severance.
About this in our Slack, like, I was going to say it's worth a subscription to Apple TV Plus just for that show, but there are actually many, many, many
so
great
many
Apple
good shows.
TV Plus shows. So I think it's just, I would say it's one of the essential streaming services out there.
I'm behind on Shrinking, but go watch Shrinking. Harrison Ford's great. Go support his good work.
Okay, so we have two more categories to get into here, what we've been eating and what we've been playing. What have you been eating recently, Nina?
That was such a left field question when I saw it earlier. I cook a lot. That's something that I like to do after a long day of work, is I find it very soothing to cook. So something I made recently that I really loved and was a spicy salmon roll bowl from Bon Appetit, where you cube, you know, a really gorgeous salmon filet, you toss it in a little spicy mayo, you broil it, and then you basically make yourself a little like sushi bowl. Some avocado, some pickled cucumber, some rice, a little spicy sauce. I make a lot of pasta. Pasta amatriciana is one of the core pastas of Rome, and it's pork in, like cured pork in some form. If you can get guanciale, do it. If not, bacon is great. Just tomato and onion and cheese. And then,
have you been to Rome, Nina?
Not since I was a kid. I've been to Italy. I was in Italy for a couple of weeks just this past summer, but there are like four, it's carbonara, amatriciana, grecia, and cacio e pepe are like the four core pastas of Rome.
Yeah. My wife and I went to Italy and we spent a month there in 2022.
Nice.
And I had that for the first time there and was just like, my mind was blown. And I try to order it occasionally at, you know, whatever high-end Italian restaurants we happen to find in here in Florida. So just some great stuff. Like seeing this written out on our little document here, I was just like, my God, I'm so hungry. I want this right now.
Well, if you ask nicely later, I'll share my all-time secret for the perfect version of it.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, so in terms of the, just quickly, the day of the Super Bowl, every single year, my family gets a Carvel football cake for the Super Bowl. It is an ice cream cake shaped like a football with so many chocolate crunchies on it. It's the best. It's my favorite part of the Super Bowl, except for if the Eagles happen to win. So that is what I was eating this week, is a lot of ice cream cake, and I have no regrets.
All right, so the last section here, what we've been playing. This can be music, this can be video games, this can be any sort of game at all. What have you been playing recently?
Well, in terms of music, I took a self-imposed Taylor Swift break before the Super Bowl out of weird allegiance to the Eagles. So I was listening to a lot of Kendrick Lamar, actually. GNX is such a good album. Go stream it if you have not. And now that I'm past the Super Bowl, I'm back to listening to a lot of Taylor Swift. All you haters can suck it. In terms of games, I did get Zelda Echoes of Wisdom a while ago and have been really kind of slow in starting it. So I'm really, really, really early in it, but it's a very cute, fun game. Are you familiar with the Zelda Echoes of Wisdom?
I am not. Is this on the Switch? Is this the
follow-up? It's a Switch game, and it's a much, it's not a follow-up to Tears of the Kingdom or Breath of the Wild, because it's a very different style. It's like much more kind of childlike in its imagery, and you get to play as Zelda for the very first time. Well, I shouldn't say the very first time in the franchise, because if I'm wrong, someone's going to yell at me. So you get to play as Zelda, and that is special, because Link basically gets vanished at the very beginning of the game, like Zelda usually does. So then you are Zelda for the rest of the game. And instead of engaging in hand-to-hand combat, because she's Zelda and she's probably not cut out for that, you have this little magic wand where you can learn an echo of an item or a monster that you fight. And then when you go fight the next monster, you release an echo of the previous monster, who then wails on that monster for you. So you basically go around the game building, you solve puzzles by building, by recreating monsters who do your bidding. It's a very cute little game. I definitely want to make more headway in it once I have a couple minutes to spare. And then as you probably have guessed, I have a Switch, which is the only console that I have. And I'm pretty much always in a replay of Spiritfarer. Are you familiar with Spiritfarer?
I don't think I've ever heard of this, no.
So it is it's an indie game, so that's not totally surprising. I forget how I found it, but it is available not just on the Switch. It's available on a ton of platforms, including like PC. I think it's available on basically every single gaming platform. And it is, you are the ferryman of the dead, whose name is Charon, and I never know how to pronounce that, so I'm not going to. I'm spelling it. And he's retiring, so you are playing a character named Stella. Your cat Daffodil is by your side, and you take over his boat, and you drive your boat around this mystical world. You pick up spirits who are shaped like cute little animals, and you run errands for them. You build them houses on your boat. You basically make them happy, and then once their storylines are over, the spirit will tell you that they're ready to go to the Everdoor, and you take them and they pass on into the next life. So you are basically in the space between life and death. It sounds darker than it is. It looks like a Hayao Miyazaki movie. The artwork is stunning. It's like a 2D platforming and resource building game. And it's the kind of game where there's so much stuff to do all the time. There's so many errands to run and, you know, little missions to do, that I have definitely had nights where I'll, you know, hook my Switch up to the TV and start playing it, and then look at my watch and go, oh my God, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I've been here for 5 hours. What did I do? Because it's there's just always like something new and fun to do and learn. And even replaying it, I find that it's just a fun and soothing activity. I am definitely an atypical gamer in that I find combat to be so stressful that I genuinely don't even enjoy it. So this kind of low stakes game that's also has a really great story and gorgeous artwork is much more my speed. But I will recommend Spiritfarer to absolutely anyone who will listen. So it's on major platforms now. It's a phenomenal game. You're probably going to do a little bit of crying, so I'm sorry about that, but it's very, very like charming and fun and sweet and touching. And, it's unlike anything that I've ever played or seen on a video game platform.
Wow. Okay. So that's Spiritfarer. Have you played Untitled Goose Game?
I have it, and I have not started it. I know it's like this big cult classic, though.
Yeah. Chris was a big fan of it when that first came out. And I think just in terms of like a non-combat type of thing, relatively low stakes, I think you'll get a lot of enjoyment out of that one.
Well, in March 2020, I was heavy into Animal Crossing, obviously, because There was nothing else to do in March of 2020. So, you know, those kinds of, but then I, you know, now that we're not in a full lockdown anymore, I tried to restart Animal Crossing and was like, this sucks. I'm so bored. So, you know, mileages vary, I think, but I have been meaning to try Untitled Goose Game because I bought it when I got the Switch and then kind of forgot it's there. But yeah, I'm always looking for recommendations of kind of low stakes non-combat games. So please hit me up with those.
Cool. Yeah, I will relay any of those recommendations to you. If anyone wants to email us, I'll give you the email address here in just a second. But that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find a lot of what we talked about at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.